Hello, friends. Welcome to The Lopsided Crown, the podcast where we talk about epic fantasy in literature, film, and television. I'm Scotty Smith, and I'll be your host. Isaac Walker will join us in just a moment. So pull up a comfortable chair, warm your feet by the fire, and prepare to wear the lopsided crown. All right, welcome back to the Lopsided Crown. It's been a while. I've been out of the country. This is Scotty Smith, Isaac Walker, right here with me, and we're going to be talking about some things that are really pertinent to the fantasy fan. The first one, of course, is we have just wrapped up our 10-year epic journey, maybe not quite 10 years, but better part of a decade, epic journey of the Game of Thrones TV show. Now, it has been well documented, and we documented it very clearly in episode 6 about some of the things, some of the problems that will be discussed, at least in primarily in the last 3 episodes of the series. It was more or less a total mess. And but the question that we want to ask here is, what is the legacy of the Game of Thrones TV show? If we expand that a little bit, if we broaden that out a little bit, we might ask, what is the legacy of A Song of Ice and Fire? And maybe that legacy is not written yet. We understand that, but that is something that could tie in here. Ultimately, when we talk about 75, maybe 100 years from now, what is going to be the legacy of A Song of Ice and Fire? We know that The Hobbit, which was, you know, the first words of The Hobbit written, or at least published in 1930, the legacy there is secure. The legacy, the Tolkien legacy, is absolutely secure. What is the George R.R. Martin legacy, and does the TV show, does the crash landing of the TV show tie into his legacy at all? Isaac Walker, you watched the end of Game of Thrones. You have seen the backlash. Is this something that we can take and isolate just the last 3, 4, whatever episodes of the series? Or is this something that we have to look at as a whole and say, well, over the better part of a decade, we were thoroughly, thoroughly entertained. We had stuff to talk about around the water cooler. We bonded as friends over our common love of this show. What is the lasting legacy of Game of Thrones?
I think the TV show is going to be one that probably petered out as it crossed the finish line, but it was an amazing show for the better part of a decade. I actually think this ends up doing absolutely nothing but heighten George R.R. Martin's reputation, aside from the people that are complaining about how long he's taking to write the books. That's always going to be there. But just from a storytelling ability, I think what you saw is a noticeable difference in the show between the content that was filled in by George R.R. Martin and where the showrunners basically had to take over from there with an outline.
Okay, so you say, so it's, you know, one of those deals where, relating it to sports for a little bit, if once, you know, a coach that comes into a team can do well with the players that were brought in by the other coach, but once those players have cycled out and that new coach is on his own, he's going to sink or swim based completely on his ability to get creative or whatever you may say there. It seemed like the further we got away from the writings of George R.R. Martin, and I know some of the actors have said, well, this was George's idea, that was George's idea. The further we got away from the George R.R. Martin script, the more it seemed to come unraveled. Is that fair enough?
Yes, I think that's absolutely fair.
So now, one thing that has happened is people are now even more anxiously awaiting the books just because they were disappointed in the ending of the show and they want to see where the what direction the books take. One thing that has been a little disconcerting is that George himself has said, if I ever finish the book. And he trolled, oh man, he trolled some folks so hard when he said, in April, the draft is here, you know, and he had a link to his website, and all these fantasy fans followed the link to the site, and he had written 22 paragraphs on the upcoming NFL draft. You know, they were wanting so badly to have a draft of Winds of Winter, and I just don't see anything that really suggests that we're going to see that anytime soon. And now he has his hand in all kinds of other projects. As you have pointed out before, the man does not appear to be, he's not what you would look at least by appearances, and say, this man is the picture of health. He's going to keep going forever. George may not see it that way, but there is at least reason. Would you say there is reason for concern that this series may never actually be finished?
Sure. I mean, given how much there's left, yeah, I think it's completely possible. Maybe even probable at this point.
Yeah. So it's hit or miss on whether or not The Song of Ice and Fire will ever truly finish. We may be looking at a Robert Jordan, Brandon Sanderson situation where somebody has to be elected the official, the official biographer of the world of Westeros once the original biographer has gone on. But that, you know, that actually happened with L. Frank Baum and the Wizard of Oz series. And, you know, he got to elect his successor. So, you know, those things do happen in fantasy, particularly when you're talking about really, really long, drawn-out series, epics, yeah, as it were. So now we are kind of left with the question, well, what do we do now? And a lot of fantasy fans, especially newly discovered fantasy fans, are thinking that exact same thing. And you see a lot of online sites coming up with the old, if you loved Game of Thrones, then you are sure to love this. And we have, we've kind of gone off in a new direction, and we'll talk about that, in just a minute. But before we do have some fantasy news that may or may not be true. There is at least a reason to believe that, the Patrick Rothfuss series, the Kingkiller Chronicles, it looks like it, which we both enjoy. The first and second book were both great. It looks like the third book, and it's been a long time since the second book came out, it looks like the third book could have a potential release date. Do you want to explain what we have discovered about that series?
So it looks like Amazon has posted a release date online for book three, The Doors of Stone, as August of 2020. And there's been no confirmation. You know, there's a lot going back and forth on whether this is, you know, a clerical error of some sort, or if this is a legit mistake that someone was supposed to keep quiet and they'll get fired. It doesn't seem that out of the question, given what Rothfuss has said in the past, although he's, you know, claimed that all of it's been written, and then he's claimed that, well, most of it's been written, and then he's claimed, well, I still got a lot more to go. So it just depends on what version of Rothfuss' story you want to believe in. But I'm looking forward to it. I would love for it to be true that August of 2020, book three will be out.
So what we have done, because we are, I guess, I think it's fair to say that you and I are both frustrated by some of our favorite authors kind of taking a little longer to publish series than what we had hoped. We have actually gone forward with our next project with a series that is actually complete. Now, we're going outside the other two, and we're talking here about Patrick Rothfuss, of course, George R. R. Martin, We have thrown our hat into the ring of Polish writer Andrzej Sapkowski. Now, Sapkowski is a fantastic writer. He has finished his series. He has said that he is not going to write anything chronologically past where he ended. But he has created a character, or at least in the 90s, he created several works that in early 2000s of a character known as The Witcher. Now, here in these United States, The Witcher is best known for the video game The Witcher Wild Hunt. Okay, and The Witcher Wild, there were three total Witcher games. Across those three games, there were 40 million copies sold or downloaded. 40 million. 20 million of those, half of those were The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. So The Witcher character has become very big in the video game world, and there are reasons why. It is a visually stunning game with a great soundtrack, and really, really has all of the elements that you want to see in fantasy fiction. Andrzej Sapkowski is a quote machine. He's a great interview. I've seen him recently in interviews, both in English and in with Polish subtitles, or with English subtitles, Polish interview. But he said, if I put potatoes on the stove to boil, I can tell you in 20 minutes the potatoes will be ready. With a book, I have no idea. That sounds like a quote from George R.R. Martin or something that Martin would say. But Sapkowski is a guy who has promised more works involving the Witcher, but he has no idea when that'll happen. He has said he's not going to let it go chronologically past where the five-book series has ended. There are a total of 7 books. And for those of you who are interested in the Witcher series, we'll give you a few reasons, or have never heard of the Witcher series, we'll give you a few reasons why this is a really big deal. Netflix took notice of the Game of Thrones TV show popularity, and they wanted to create something that could be their Game of Thrones. So what they did, they developed or bought the rights to produce a brand new Witcher series. Now, there was one in Polish several years ago, in the, I believe the late 90s, but or even 2000, early 2000s, but they are producing a brand new Witcher series with Henry Cavill from the Superman series as The Witcher. It is going to be probably premiering in October of 2019. We have heard the fall of 2019 is the generic, and then more specifically, maybe October of 2019. And they are going to sink a lot of money into this project. We are going to watch The Witcher series, but it'll be interesting to see how far they stray from the book. That was something that was interesting with Game of Thrones, and now it is something that is interesting with The Witcher. So we're going back and looking at book material. Video game fans will obviously want them to follow some of the storylines that are found in the video games, and some of those overlap. But when Sapkowski was asked what would be the difference between his series and Game of Thrones, or at least the TV series and Game of Thrones, Sapkowski said, well, the main difference is my series is finished. So we know the end of the story. Maybe throwing a little shade there, George R.R. Martin. And he also threw a little shade, because he throws shade, that's what he does. He threw a little shade at the showrunners of the Game of Thrones series when he said, my job as creative control director is to make sure that Ed Sheeran never sings on our TV show. So he is not in with the commercialization, I guess, of having some of these celebrities and stuff involved in the show. He wants to stick to, the original source material, as all writers, I'm sure, do. The one exception to that would be Stephen King, who famously told John Grisham, when it comes to Hollywood, just take the money and run. They're going to do with it what they want to do with it anyway. So what we want to do is kind of set the tone or set the scene, kind of take a look at the world of The Witcher, and, you know, where this action takes place, some of the main characters and what we know about them. And we're going to kind of start with The Last Wish, which is a frame narrative book of short stories and following the ancient and time-honored concept of the frame narrative, where you have one outside story, and then within that outside story, you have a bunch of little stories that are being told. And they really kind of show who the Witcher is and what kind of work he does. So, Isaac Walker, if you were talking to somebody who knew absolutely nothing about the Witcher series, what would you want them to know?
Okay, that's pretty difficult, but I'll take a stab at it. How about, it's the story about a outcast man who his character is torn between these values that he has been taught to uphold and has been instilled in him from a very young child, into and what his kind of personal beliefs are, into constantly finding himself in situations and relationships where that is being called into question, and he's really torn on how he handles these situations, and it comes out in the form of battling monsters or being involved in the wars of men, or this overarching theme that he refers to as you know, they use the term destiny quite a bit, but it's the idea of there's a destiny that ties him and all these other people into what's going on around them from a war's perspective, from a political perspective. And it's his story through all of this. And the writer kind of takes an interesting approach where each chapter kind of bounces around. You'd usually have one set of chapters that is the current timeline, and then you bounce around to other stories that help you lead up to that current timeline. But in general, I'd probably say that's probably the best brief description of The Witcher.
And this man, this outcast, we see from the very, very start in The Blood of Elves when he walks into a bar, okay? So an old tavern. This is very much a medieval world, very much the same type of world as Game of Thrones, for those of you who are looking for parallels here between this series and Game of Thrones. I'll give you a comparison and a contrast. The comparison is the world that you're going to see is probably very similar, with one major exception, and that is the role of cities. You see cities being a big part of this. So he's in the country, he's in this, it's urban, it's rural, it's urban, it's rural, it's urban. He goes to like the different towns and villages, but also he goes into some major cities. And he, who is the he we're talking about? Well, imagine I'm going to say 6'3", what?
Albino.
Yeah, more or less albino. 6'3", very strong, muscular man with, even though he is probably no more than 40 years old, he has long white hair, bright white or, you know, silver gray hair. His eyes, depending on the elixirs and drugs he is taking at the time, can be anywhere from steel gray to like a golden cat-like or amber type of eyes. So he looks very different from the other humans around him. He carries, depending on the time period, one or two giant swords on his back. He rides a horse or a series of horses that all have the same name, the name of Roach. And he may be, at any given time, hauling a monster that he drug out of a swamp and killed, or a forest and killed, or a sewer and killed, But his job and the way that he makes his money to eat and to live and survive is to kill monsters. There may be something lost in translation with The Witcher, with the name The Witcher. I think perhaps he, you know, because it's unclear, is he a witch hunter? Is he a male witch himself? Obviously, you know, he has a friend later on in the Blood of Elves whose name is Triss Marigold, and she describes herself as a witch. You know, but he is a man, and he looks rogue a lot of times, but he's not actually rogue. He was trained in the ruins of an old castle by a very strict code of conduct for witchers. And there is this group of people known as the Witchers, and they are monster hunters. They are trying to rid the world of monsters. And one thing that kind of becomes apparent, I don't know if the medieval, it is a medieval world very much based in our world, or maybe a medieval version of our world, northern and maybe even Eastern European, around Poland, Germany, probably a lot of those areas, maybe some of what we would formerly call the Soviet Union, that kind of area. And it's difficult to say, is this a complete fantasy world made up in the mind of the author, or was it our world in the time where monsters roamed this earth, and maybe the Witcher and his compadres are the reasons why there are no, because there is this constant hint at, well, there aren't really as many monsters anymore, and the Witchers are kind of the reason why. So we see a guy who is, killing is literally his business. It is his line of work.
Yeah, and so, you know, maybe a little bit more background on this. So geographically, if you're looking at this, like they have maps, and it kind of helps to understand if you're going to start reading what you're looking at. So imagine a land that looks like the state of California. It's a very long, skinny land. It's got mountains on the east side, and past the mountains is all desert. And it's got ocean on the left side, or on the west side. And then that state of California is cut in half, top and bottom, by a river. And so the northern kingdoms are like the free kingdoms, and they're made up of a handful of different countries, but there's four big ones. And then there's a handful of countries below or south of the river. And there's this, in the very, very far south, there's this country called Nilfgaard. And what you find that is that this country, is, even though it's really far away, is basically working its way north, conquering. And so as the stories go, as the series go on, this group of Nilfgaard, or this country of Nilfgaard, becomes a bigger and bigger problem. But in the meantime, each of these countries has their own monarchy, so to speak. And you have kings and you have queens. And so what you have is Geralt just kind of goes from place to place. He's pretty nomadic, trying to find problems or monsters that he needs to take care of. And in the meantime, he comes across, he has relationships with all these different people. There's witches, or wizards and sorceresses. There's gnomes and dwarves. There's regular men, there's halflings, and all the, you know, and all that stuff that goes on. But in general, what you see is politically, there's a lot going on. When Nilfgaard comes up, you see all the countries band together to fight them off. But as soon as that is taken care of, they go back to squabbling amongst themselves. And so the book hops around those northern kingdoms quite a bit. So the first book that we talked about was The Last Wish, is what is it? And it's told basically in maybe five or six chapters.
Yeah.
And each chapter is a little bit unique. And it's one of those things where there's three of those chapters is current day. Here's what's going on. And so in this case, Geralt is very badly wounded, and he's gone to his friend at what is basically a monastery. It's a temple.
And this old lady, Neneka, is helping him heal over his wounds, essentially. And then the in-between chapters are how he got to the point where he was, where he is there. And there's two main events that happen in The Last Wish. The first one is he meets, it is the story of meeting of, well, I won't say meeting because he hasn't yet, but it sets up later books by his relationship with Queen Calanthe of Sintra, which is just the first kingdom south of the river. And so he meets her, and I won't get into the details just yet, but that's one big story. And then the other big story is how he meets another famous character called Yennefer, which is kind of like the love of his life. But she's also kind of not the nicest lady at times. But it's the story of how he meets her and how their relationship starts.
And their relationship is even further explored in The Sword of Destiny, and some time has passed between The Last Wish and The Sword of Destiny, and you see just how big a deal for Geralt of Rivia, who is the Witcher. Geralt of Rivia is his name. Geralt has... he's probably more concerned with Yennefer when he is away from her than he is when he is with her, to be honest. It really is something that kind of comes to dominate his life, his relationship with this sorceress who is probably, I don't know, a couple hundred years old, and she looks like she's about 30 or even younger. I mean, there's some people say even younger. So, but she is a very beautiful lady, very beautiful sorceress, and it becomes the love of his life. So there is that element to it, but that's not really the main storyline. One thing that we get out of this story that is very, very different than what we get in Game of Thrones is that we get this more or less third-person limited narration, which we see the world the way that it is through the eyes of Geralt of Rivia. It is not a first-person narrative, but the action follows Geralt of Rivia. So, because that is the case, we really don't have what you would have in Game of Thrones, where you're shifting back and forth between 15, 16, even 20 different characters and trying to follow all of their storylines. All of the characters in this book, their storylines are only important because of how they intersect with Geralt's storyline. For instance, you take the trope of the bard poet storyteller, a guy by the name of Dandelion, who is very much a stereotypical bard poet storyteller kind of guy. He goes from town to town. He sings his songs. He's a bit flamboyant. He is a lover of ladies. Many different ladies. He is not going to be one who is tied down by a relationship. He's not the kind of guy that would ever want to be in a fight. Instead, he is going to be there for comic relief and making jokes and to flirt and all of those different kinds of things. You have the dark sorceress, which is Yennefer. You have the dark sorceress's best friend, who is really in love with the dude, which is Triss Marigold, which we don't meet her till much later. You have the ward, which is kind of taken on as the relationship between a mentor and Geralt and someone younger who is trying to learn from him in the character of Ciri. So you have a lot of maybe classic fantasy tropes in this, but the storytelling is really what I think sets it apart. And I love all of the different little individual adventures instead of just, oh, we've got this one big massive adventure and let's make sure we get to what it ends up being, even though it's part of a frame narrative, is just a series of short stories that all involve this character. So you got two books of short stories in frame narrative form, and then you got five books as a novel series. If you are going to read this series, please start with The Last Wish, followed by The Sword of Destiny, and then you can get into the five-book series, which starts with The Blood of Elves. It is all worth your time. One quick anecdote. We meet a guy. This is just the kind of thing that you're going to get. When you start out a Geralt story, you have no idea what you're going to get. And we quickly come across in the first real story that's like an adventure, Geralt comes across a guy who has been turned into a massive bear. And it's just kind of one of those things like, all right, you know, why is this guy a bear? What happened to him? What is his story? And so you kind of get the human element. It's this series is really all about storytelling. It's not, you know, special effects. And there are all kinds of situations like that where you meet somebody. Later on, we meet a guy who is in love with a mermaid. And it's kind of like, how do we do this? The mermaid is in love with him. He's in love with the mermaid, but there are challenges here because he can't swim in the water and she can't walk on land. What's going to happen? What's going to get, you know, those kinds of things are all, you know, part of it. So we have all these little stories and it really just becomes a masterclass in storytelling, all within the framework of classical fantasy elements. So I think that is something that sets this series apart from maybe other fantasy series.
Yeah. I'm really excited about it. Like I said, I have read the first three books. So I've read The Last Wish, Sword of Destiny, and just finished The Blood of Elves. And it's been really good. It's built on each book is built on the previous one really, really well so far. I'm excited to see what it has. I'm really excited about the series that's going to be coming out in the fall. So I think maybe a short-term goal would be maybe to take an episode for each book and kind of go through the highlights of each book between now and the fall and see if we can make it through all six of them before the time comes, or seven of them, I guess.
Yeah, that sounds good. So we'll be doing that. And then when the series comes out, we'll have some time where we can, you know, we want to get people excited about the series. And then we can take the series. And of course, it'll be inevitable. We will, you know, compare and contrast the series and the book. But we definitely, I'm going to go ahead and set it in my mind right now in June that I'm not going to just be overly upset when there are discrepancies between the books and the TV show. I think if I do that, it will make me crazy. It always makes me crazy with movies. I want movies to stick to the original source material, and that is just rather impossible. And we found that out with Game of Thrones, as there were so many things where the showrunners went in kind of a different, maybe they stayed close to the path, but enough of a discrepancy to make book lovers just go crazy. And I think it's something to kind of set in our minds right now that we're not going to be able to take this show and expect it to be everything that we read in the books.
Yeah, no, I will not make that mistake again. Yeah. Especially when it comes to fantasy fiction, and especially epic fantasy fiction, there's too much to account for, and there's too much work that goes into the building of the characters, and you can't expect it to be reproduced. I'm gonna do my best to view this as a supplement to anything, and go from there. And maybe that'll keep me from being as disappointed as I was with Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. You got three different elements here, all kind of surrounding the same character. You've got Geralt of the books, you've got Geralt of the video games, and you've got Geralt of the series, and then how all of these, I guess, secondary characters interact in his life. So you're, you know, kind of following the world through the protagonist. So that's what we're going to ask you to do. If you want to get in on another series now that Game of Thrones has ended, check out The Witcher. It is a fantastic read. It's really just great as far as storytelling goes. And then get ready for the show, which will be coming up in the fall. All right. Any other fantasy-related news or final comments, Isaac Walker?
Not that I can think of at the moment, other than, you know, my son's excited for the additional Harry Potter content that's going to be coming out. Now, granted, it doesn't appear to be, you know, it was a little bit of a misleading headline where they made it sound like there were going to be new books, but the books are more...
Companion
books. It sounds like they're going to do some textbook type books that the people in at Hogwarts would have gone through. So like the
History of Magic,
Defense Against the Dark Arts, that type of stuff. But still, it'll be good to kind of refresh some of our thoughts on that series as well.
Absolutely, and of course there will always we've still got three more Fantastic Beasts films coming up, and we have our tickets in November. We'll be going for the first time to Universal Studios, drinking the old butter beer, riding on the Hogwarts Express, getting a wand at Ollivander's, and Hagrid's motorbike ride through the Forbidden Forest. We're doing the whole nine, man, and we're really, really excited about that. Always great things going on in the fantasy world. One thing we can say about, this is the last thing that we'll say about Game of Thrones before we kind of wrap that up. It has prompted a lot of other production companies to want to do fantasy-related material. We are seeing more and more and more of that. There's going to be, prequel series for the Game of Thrones, for the world of Westeros. There will be some new Tolkien-related material. There is going to be a Kingkiller Patrick Rothfuss series that is kind of a prequel series to the Kingkiller books. It will not necessarily be what we read in the books, but maybe like the parents of the protagonist in that series, something along those lines. Lin-Manuel Miranda is involved in that, so that'll be pretty cool. And then the Chronicles of Narnia. There is a that is in production right now, taking all seven, supposedly, all because the movie series stopped at three, but taking all seven Chronicles of Narnia books and making a series out of that. So that should be fun. A lot going on if you are a fantasy fan. And so we encourage everybody to comment. You can find us on Twitter right there at Ridersmith42, or send me an email. We'll talk about it on the show, Ridersmith42@gmail.com. Real quickly, last shameless plug here. I wrote a book, a fantasy book for kids about 10 years ago, and I am doing a 10th anniversary edition of that to raise money for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. You can find it on Amazon. It is going to be it was a small publishing company 10 years ago, and now it's going to be on Amazon Kindle Direct Publishing. It will be... it's called The Quest of the Blue Majesty. That is the new title. It's got a new cover, got a new ebook. First time that it's ever been in ebook format. So you can look it up there. My name is William Scotty Smith, officially. And so the Quest of the Blue Majesty on Amazon. Right now, you can get the ebook version, and I should have that print version available on Amazon in the very near future. Again, all proceeds will go directly to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. So help me raise money for that great, great cause. All right, it's about all we got for this week. Go ahead and download your copy of The Last Wish on either Audible or ebook, or just order yourself a hard copy and get to reading so that you will be ready for the new Witcher series coming out on Netflix in the fall of 2019. That's about it for now. On behalf of Isaac Walker, I'm Scotty Smith, and thanks for listening to The Lopsided Crown. Well, your feet should be plenty warm by now, and you are free to go on your journey. But visit us again in the near future as we seek to discuss the very best of epic fantasy in literature, film, and television.
You can also visit lopsidedcrown.wordpress.com for more stories in this genre. Happy wandering, and thank you for listening to The Lopsided Crown.